welcome to our conference, where we will be briefed by the National Department of Tourism on the department's annual report for 2017-2018 in preparation for our own budgetary review and recommendations report that we shall be doing and adopting next week. I would hand over to the committee secretary to take us through any apologies.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, Chair, we have not received any written apologies to this meeting. So hoping that some members are still trapped in other meetings, as they have indicated even yesterday, and that almost all committees of parliament are sitting now in the same process that we are undertaking.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boltina. Yes, just to give the department the overview is that we, all committees of parliament are currently sitting on the very same process. And unfortunately, we have members who are also members of other committees. So we believe that they shall join us in due time for this meeting when they finish their other portfolio committee meetings. And with these few words, I would not waste time since we are now behind time. I would hand over to the DG to take us through his presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and greetings to all present, including my colleagues. The report, Honorable Members, is really our account of what did we do with what we promised to do, whether we were able to achieve the things that we were going to do, if we were able to achieve them, whether there are things that we have done better, whether there are things that we can improve, and the things that we were not able to do. We are also mindful, Honorable Chairperson, that we are presenting this report at a time when there will not be another annual report that will be presented to this committee. So this is, if we're to contextualize it, is really the last annual report that we'll be presenting in the current term of Parliament. We did reflect, which is not necessarily for presentation today, but we did reflect on how well or not have we done during this particular period. And we do think that at a strategic level we've been able to make very good progress, whether it is with regards to the growth in terms of number of tourists coming to the country over the past 4 years, whether it is with regards to the growth in terms of jobs that are associated with tourism overall, that we feel that we were able to do that as well. Whether it was the contribution of this sector to the overall GDP, we also believe that we've done well with regards to that. But also empowerment of youth, we have done well. Youth that have been able to gain very important skills, such as being chefs, sommeliers. Some have gone on to become their own employers. Others have been snatched in other countries and they are doing well there. Others have actually joined the industry locally. And we have also, during the same period, been able to do a number of capital projects that have led to communities that are actually currently participating in tourism, given quite a lot of opportunities in terms of market access to a lot of businesses and so on and so forth. I can go on and on, but I do think at some point, at an appropriate time, it will be good to actually share what we have actually been able to do over that period before this term ends, so that we can actually give that particular account. I will try and go through the first part of the presentation, which deals with audit method. After which, then I will hand over to the CFO to go to through the details of the financials, and then come back and give perhaps what I should do even before I go into the audit is to deal with slide 13. Is to deal with the overall performance of the organization. We go to slide 15. Honorable members, that slide shows exactly what we've been able to do. 90.91% of the targets that we meant to do. 60 targets out of 66 targets that we were able to achieve. I need to state that this is for the first time that we've been able to cross the 90% mark. Previously, we would keep knocking at that, but we had never really crossed that. We are also very happy that on average, programs were above 80 in terms of their performance. And some of the details with regards to what we were doing in this achievement, they will come as we then go through the details. Let's go back to the slides for the audit. That will be, we'll start from slide 4. Honorable members, we received an unqualified audit, which had matters, but these were not matters of emphasis. They were matters that were raised by the Auditor General that pertain to the financial aspect of our report. The predetermined objectives, there were no findings. Usually they would say there were no material findings, but there were no findings. So it means in terms of the performance information, we had a clean audit. Let's go to the next one. The issues that were raised related to, on slide 5, compliance with laws and regulations. I would like to speak a little bit about this. What is stated is that there was a non-compliance with key applicable legislation as identified. And one of those issues relates to the misstatement of the disclosure item identified by the auditors in the submitted financial statements, which were then corrected and supporting records were provided subsequently, resulting in financial statements receiving unqualified opinion. Second one is issues of goods and services that are under the value of 500,000 that are bought through quotations that did not necessarily obtain all the quotations. And there was an issue about capital assets which relate to the project, whether the projects are deemed to be complete, and if they are deemed to be complete, then they must come into the asset register as an asset that we own if they are not yet handed over but deemed to be complete. We accept all these findings, which is why we signed off on the reports. But I think it is important to provide clarity to the honorable members so that there's an understanding of what are these issues. In the case of the 270 odd thousand, which was deemed to be regular expenditure on the basis that three quotations were not received. This relates to a request for quotation that goes out at the same time. You have other suppliers that say, sorry, I will not be quoting. You've got others that say, this is my quotation. In some instances, you end up with, say, two or so that have decided to quote, and you've got a few that have said they're not going to quote. The community is waiting for you. You're supposed to do an imbizo with them. But you've got people that are saying they're actually not going to quote. So you've got to actually make a decision. What then do you do under those circumstances? So those are the issues that relate to the issues around quotations. We had a long discussion with the AG on this matter. And ultimately, we then agreed that there will always be instances that it may actually be impossible to force the market to respond to your quotation request. The non-responsiveness of the market must, however, be tested, and it must be supported properly with documentation. We then had discussions with the AG and Treasury, and the ultimate thing we agreed on was that going forward, what we will have to do is to determine a number of days that would be deemed reasonable for having tried sufficiently. Because if there is no response at all, there's nothing that can be done. But work must take place. The community, the public will still be waiting for the services, but we can't say that the suppliers have decided that they're actually not going to be bidding for this particular one or for that particular one. So those number of days we've decided on, we've shared that information with the AG, we're on the same page, and we also make sure that we maintain strict discipline so that the people that deal with these things, whenever they pick up something that has got one or two, and they've already done that and they've brought those to our attention, it either goes to the CFO or it comes to me. And we have to go through it and look at whether there is merit at all under the circumstances, and then we would be able to proceed with those. There are some that we have actually said, no, there is no merit, and we have actually declined. So that's really the context. The materiality of this, it was immaterial. Out of the budget that we've got, this is about 0.002 or 0.003 after the comma. one something percent of the budget overall. But we were requested by the AG subsequently to say include it in so that it's fully transparent and it is visible and so on and so forth. But it is a matter that we are fully in control of as we speak. The second issue, which relates to matters pertaining to the classification of these assets. It's a matter that going forward we are still having serious discussions about, and there's even some level of agreement between ourselves and the AG that perhaps there is some attention that's supposed to be paid, perhaps from the side of the accountant general. Honorable Chairperson, you have a scenario where you've got a project. You've done everything in that project, it's completed, but it is not yet handed over to the community. When you started with the project, the sole intention was to hand over this project to the community. Before you actually hand over this project, there's a fire that breaks out there. The community knows that it has a project that is currently under implementation, which is work in progress, that is going to come to them when it's finished. But you have it as an asset that you have already put in your own books. So the question that comes in is this our asset, or it's work in progress until such time that it is handed over? In cases where such a fire breaks out, we now have to go back and rectify that particular situation. Now, if this was deemed to be a complete project and it is already in our files, it means it's going to be a fresh application. We can't just walk in and do something. So all these problems amount to whether the manner in which we are supposed to be accounting for this should be the way that currently the modified cash says we should do, and what are the consequences of actually accounting in that way. But there is no missing cent. Everything is accounted for, but it is the classification that becomes the issue. And that's a matter that I'm hoping that as we have discussions with Treasurer on this, we will find some way of the standard accommodating such scenarios that I've just shared. We do have one project that has actually been bent down when there were municipal service delivery protests and so on. And it's around Port St. John's. Now, if we go back there, we've got to go, based on this classification, we've got to go back and do the whole process. And that process might take yet another year. And yet what we are supposed to do is really just to fix what is wrong within that. But because of the way we would have accounted for it, those are the issues that would still arise. Then the last thing was there are two types of transfers that we do. One would be to an entity of government, and another one would be to a private entity. They are supposed to be classified differently, these advances. Now, when you read the guideline, it says that advance that is for government must be called advance. Advance that is going to a private entity must be a prepayment. Now, what happens with this is that in our case, what we did was we classified both as prepayments. I would have been more worried if we had classified them as advance, because that would have not shown that there is money that is actually going into private hands as opposed to going into the public sector generally. But both of them are actually called advance in accordance with this. So these are the issues. These are the three issues basically. So we have to take those classifications and say, okay, this will bring back and classify as this. That then will classify as projects completed as opposed to work in progress. And those are the amendments that had to be done to the financial statements per se. We had gone through, normally when we're finished with our books, Ralph will go through them thoroughly, I will go through them thoroughly. Once we've done that, we even go and get somebody externally to look at these things. Unfortunately, none of us could see that. Assurance we did, but none of us could actually see any of that. But what I'm comfortable with, honorable members, is that we have been able to spend this money that we spent, the 99.7%, in a manner that observes the strictest of the rules in terms of governance, and that's why we are still able to say after the entire term of office we have been able to have audits that are deemed to be clean, and that we are happy about. So that's the long and short of the audit matters. But I thought I should take you through this. I had lengthy discussions with the AG on these matters, and at some point they would even say we agree, we fully agree. But unfortunately, this is what we must use. We understand what you're saying and the problems that you will face with, but this is what we must use. Go back and talk to the rule makers. We don't make the rules, we use the rules. So those are the kinds of issues that we've experienced. Ralph?
Thank you, DJ. Afternoon, Chairperson, committee members. I am on slide number 8. As you can see, our budget was very tight in the 2017-18 financial year. As Didi said, we spent 99.7% of our budget. We did have to do some requirements at the end of a financial year. That was mainly on a compensation of employees. We got approval from the Minister of Finance to increase our compensation of employees with 12 million rand. And to do that, we had to do the requirement across the programs. As you can see, that on administration, our spending was 100%, tourism policy and planning 100%, destination development 99.8%, and then enterprise and visitor support services, we had a 98.2% spending. The variance there was due to the payments that we held back for the Kruger National Park Energy Efficiency Project. It was not 100% completed, so that payment only went through in the 18-19 financial year. On the next slide is just an indication of our spending to see where does it stand. You can see administration was 12%, tourism policy planning was 56%, destination development 20%, and enterprise and visitor support services was also 12%. On the next slide, it gives us just a breakdown of our expenditure per economic classification. There you can see that the current expenditure compensation of employees, the amount that was left was only 613,000, and the goods and services, there was a 5 million left, which relate to the Kruger National Park project, and then we had minor savings and transfers and subsidies, which is more related to foreign exchange rate fluctuations, and then ultimately our saving was 6.1 million rand. And then on the next slide is the classification, just to show how it was spent on current payments 28%, and transfers and subsidies 62%, and then our capital assets was a spending of 10%. On the next slide is just to show that the amounts that had to be surrendered back to National Treasury. All national departments, provincial departments, at the end of the year, you have to surrender any funds that is left back to Treasury unless you apply for rollover funding. And that is usually only granted if you've got capital projects. But in our instance, we could not apply for any of this rollover funding. And that's why we surrendered the 6.1 million rand back to Treasury. Thank you, Chairperson.
Policy and planning. As just mentioned by both DG and the CFO, as a program that's responsible for tourism research policy and international relations in a summary, we managed to spend all our money and achieve all our targets for the year under review. I'm currently on slide 18, and I'm just going to take you through what we have done in the year. The first slide speaks to the number of platforms that we facilitate to improve stakeholder engagement and the implementation of the NTSS. We had targeted three platforms, one being the annual National Tourism Stakeholder Forum, That is a platform which is chaired by the Director General with public and private sector, that we look into a number of issues, but also highlighting the actions that are required to implement the National Tourism Sector Strategy. We plan to host one of these forums in the previous financial year. We managed to host two, mostly because we finalized the NTSS and we had to engage on that before the submission to Cabinet. Slide 19 speaks to two platforms, the one being the annual public lecture. That is a public lecture that we host, a ministerial public lecture that we host annually in September as part of Tourism Month and linked to the theme. Last year's lecture was hosted in Mbombela in partnership with Mpumalanga Tourism and Parks Agency. Then we also host a tourism research seminar on an annual basis, and that is the platform that we use to disseminate the research that was done through our MOUs with universities, as well as the students that that is supported through the department has the opportunity to either present or to present the posters during this seminar. What we've started to do is also to link workshops to the seminar, and this year we linked a workshop to the seminar that focused on one of the tools that was developed through a research project, so that we take the relevant stakeholders through step by step how do you use this tool that was developed. Slide 20 speaks to our policy development initiatives. The one was around policy bulletins, where we published two tourism policy bulletins that focus on proactive tracking and analysis of global and national policy development that has an impact on tourism. We published those on our website, and we were very pleased to note during the research seminar that some of the researchers do use, or they said that it came up number one when they searched for policy bulletins. The next target relates to a policy positions in relation to the negative unintended implications of the development in the sharing economy, and related specifically to the accommodation sector. And that work we did internally based on international best practice to inform the work that we've done in the policy, in the review of the bill, tourism bill. On slide 21 speaks to the number of monitoring and evaluation reports that we've developed. Our target for the year was four. The first one speaks to the State of Tourism Report. We publish an annual State of Tourism Report, and the 2016 State of Tourism Report was developed, and it was since published and is available on the department's website. We also did an evaluation report on the food safety program, as well as the tourism incentive program, but specifically the market access initiative. Then annually on slide 22 now, we also develop a national tourism sector strategy implementation report where we track progress made towards the achievements of the NTSS objectives. Then on slide 23, it speaks to the number of information systems and frameworks that we develop as part of our knowledge management program. The first annual target there speaks to the design, the concept and the design and the implementation plan for the National Tourism Information and Monitoring System, that was developed. The second target speaks to the training of youth as data capturers for the collection of the data. So all of this was in preparation for the deployment of the data collectors this year. So we plan to train two youth per municipality. I think at the end we managed to train just under 540, which is just over two per municipality. And just to note that the requirement that they was that they must have at least a NQF level 3 qualification. And then annually, and that's the next target on slide 23, we maintain the two mobile applications that were developed some time ago. We just make sure that they are up to date with the information that's provided to us. Then on slide 24, it speaks to the work that we are doing in our multilateral fora. The first initiative speaks to the draft plan for hosting of a tourism work stream during the BRICS summit. That draft plan was developed and it was used to inform the work that we are doing in this financial year, which we will report on during this year. The second target speaks to the final plan for the hosting of the tourism work stream during South Africa's chairship of the EORA, and that plan was developed and approved, and it also informed the work that we are rolling out in this financial year. On slide 25, it speaks to two targets or two initiatives that facilitate regional integration. The first one speaks to the ministerial session that we annually host on the margins or as part of the tourism or the Africa's tourism in Durban. And this year was no exception. Last year was no exception. We also hosted the ministerial on the 15th of May. And then the last initiative speaks to our annual sharing of best practices workshop. That is a workshop that is targeted at African countries with whom we have signed bilateral agreements with, but we have subsequently started to also invite other African countries and other countries that have interest in the topics that are discussed to attend the workshop. We have started to host the workshop in partnership with provinces. Last year's was therefore hosted in Mbombela in partnership with Mpumalanga. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will take you through destination development. In the year that passed, we had 7 targets. 6 of those targets were met. One of them was not, and one of the targets was exceeded. The Destination Development Branch spent 99.8% of its budget. Slide 27 is the first set of initiatives that talk to destination enhancement. These were the developments at Changoni Gate, the Palabo Wild Activity Hub, both of them in the Kruger National Park, the National Heritage Monument, and then interpretive signage at 4 different sites, and the work on these is progressing well, and the target related to this was really to monitor and report against what was the plans, and that was actually achieved. The next set of targets on slide 28 relate to the Ocean Economy Initiative. In the year under review, we were working on blue flag beaches. We have advanced work on 50 of the blue flag beaches and on 25 additional beaches which at the moment don't necessarily have blue flag status, but that we're working on them to actually bring them up to that level. And so the target of actually adding a 25 additional beaches within that program was achieved. The next target was related to the Indian Atlantic route. There was very significant work done in all 4 coastal provinces to actually map all of the products that exist in those areas and to actually look at what the demand for those products are, both current and future demand. So in the year under review, what we've done is a supply and demand analysis and an assessment of the gap between the two. We now have a very comprehensive plan for the entire route. both from a marketing perspective as well as a product development perspective and an infrastructure related perspective. That we're now looking at how we factor into IDPs, we factor into future destination enhancement work to move forward in the next year. Slide 29 talks to the planning work that we've been doing. And in some instances, what has been a challenge for tourism has been having detailed plans that can be implemented. So in the year under review, we did two pieces of work that actually assist us to advance planning across the country. The first piece of work was to develop a destination planning manual, which actually will be and is currently being rolled out across the 9 provinces to plan for destinations. So this is really to assist with building capacity at all levels of government in order to ensure that there is a consistent process of planning for destinations. The second piece of work, which was done using Vilakazi Street as our pilot, was to actually plan for a precinct. So this is now micro level, looking at how you coordinate different disciplines within a precinct development and how you improve the connectivity in those spaces and how you link a variety of pieces of work. This is also being rolled out this year in consultation with local government and provinces. Slide 30 talks to our expanded public works program, and this target was not achieved because we essentially have one project called the Letla Moraine Dam, which is in the northwest, which we didn't actually spend any money on because we had referred it to the GTAC process for review. What has happened with that process, members may recall from when we presented the detailed review of GTAC, was that we have now in fact got a reconceptualization of the dam project. This project was at the planning stage when it was referred, so the target actually refers to 6 projects funded, and technically that project, there was no funding for it because we actually were in the review process for it. But the other 5 projects were all funded and delivered. And then the very last target is actually our full-time equivalent jobs. In the year under review, we did exceed the target by about 400 odd jobs. And that was because, as I've said in the past, we learned a lot of lessons from implementing the program in the previous years. There's always dropouts on the program. And in the year under review, to kind of mitigate that risk, we actually recruited more learners than were required on each of it. So this is a target we're very happy to have exceeded. And that's the last point. I'm going to hand over to DDG Rampele.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. I'm going to present on Program 4, Enterprise and Visitor Support Services. We also call it Tourism Sector Support Services. We had 26 targets. We're able to achieve 23. 2 were not achieved at all, and 1 we had significant progress done. And the expenditure amounted to 98.2%. Already that the CFO indicated that we had an issue with the Kruger National Park, and basically that was based on us being compliant to the environmental regulations as well as the PFMA. So we couldn't go on until we ensure those things were complied on. But currently the project is completed and is operational. Slide 32, which is on the transformation, we're expected to come up with a report to monitor the implementation of the amended tourism BBBE sector code. We're able to achieve that. The second one was on being able to hold a tourism sector transformation in Durban. We're able to do that on the 30th and 31st of October at Kopano. And that platform was able to help us to really understand what we should be doing going forward in terms of our strategies.
Slide 33,
which is on the guidelines for commercialization of state-owned attractions. We were able to come up with those guidelines, and the objective is to ensure that we commercialize state-owned attractions through concessions so that we are able to transform the tourism sector through facilitation of community beneficiation, market access and skills transfer to black operators to enhance conservation and maintenance of state-owned tourism attractions. This year we'll be able to get comments from the stakeholders regarding the commercialization and guidelines of state-owned attractions. The second target in terms of the initiative to support BBBEE was to establish a funding mechanism through partnerships with development finance institutions. We're able to have an MOU with NEF in order to ensure that we are able to make sure that we get transformation by providing funding, especially to previously disadvantaged people. We are not able to implement this last year, but this year we have moved on in terms of making sure that we transform the establishment. So far we have managed to approve 4, which amounts to almost 12 million. We are hoping that traction will be gained on this transformation. On slide 34, which is on the 34 is on the... Okay, yes, that's it. It's on social tourism. But the main issue was to come up with a framework for supporting tour operators so that we facilitate social tourism. We were able to, last year, to have workshops throughout the country, and we were able to come up with a framework, but which was not finalized last year. But this year, we were able to say we have that framework. We will be piloting it not long so that we are able to make sure that we get a scheme that will be able to really facilitate the movement of people within our country. On slide 35, which is more or less joint, because we talk about the framework in terms of the social scheme as well as coming up with a scheme, the actual scheme, so they are linked together. We have finalized all these two. The main issue is for us to be able to pilot so that we're able to say, yes, this is what we need and this is what we'll be able to transform or inculcate that culture of travel within the country. Slide 36 is on enterprise development. 400 enterprises were supported for development. In this instance, we talk about where, as the department, we are able to have the walk-ins and we are able to give them information, but at the same time, where we have service providers who do one-on-one in terms of mentoring as well as coaching. We also came up with a long-term framework for enterprise development based on current policy pronouncement. Here we are saying we've been doing piecemeal in terms of enterprise development. Now we have a long-term framework which will guide us how do we deal with SMMEs in terms of making sure that we have the transformation, but at the same time they are properly supported in terms of what they want to do. That will include the very incubators that we have come up with, but now taking a model that will be able to what's the way, not only to incubate at a certain particular area, but also to be able to do this in terms of virtually. Like now we want to make sure that the incubator operator so that we are able to help them to be sustainable in their businesses. Slide 37.
Go back.
Thank you. We were expected to come up with one incubator actually. But we're able to come up with two incubators, one in Palamora, one in Mill. But at the same time, the two existing incubators that we have, to continue supporting them, because as we said, we'll support them for 3 years. So we have seen a lot of, for the two existing, especially the one that started before, the Mohulem one, we are seeing that there's enough understanding in terms of how they need to run their businesses, enough understanding in terms of how do they support each other, because it's a value chain kind of an incubator, so that they can support one another. Slide 38, which is on the four incentives programs which we supported through TIP, that is market access, tourism grading, energy efficiency, as well as universal accessibility. The incentive program support to tourism businesses, we're able to do it. We're able to make sure that in terms of grading, we have given TBCS, the grading council, to support in terms of reimbursement to those who want to be graded. Access to markets, we have done it both locally as well internationally, in terms of allowing them to be able to enhance their product offering. And we hope this will also help to assist in stimulating growth and as well as development and transformation of the sector. We also have 5 community tourism enterprises that we supported to enter the value chain. The names are indicated there. We're able to check the feasibility of those communities. So this year, we'll be supporting them in those areas where it will be feasible to really have a development as well of growth of their businesses. Slide 39 is on visitor support services. The number of initiatives that we have supported. We started first by initiating an audit of the tourist guide register so that we have uniformity across the provinces. That was done. We also worked on upgrading the security features on tourist guide identification, that is the badges. We have done this together with the printing government printing works, yes. It's done. We already have the badges as well as the cards. So at least the features on those badges will be secured as well. It's something that we'll finalize this year. In terms of the two national information gateways maintained and enhanced, we have the OAS Tambo as well as the Kinshasa, which we have managed to maintain, and we expected to initiate the one for Cape Town, which we were not able to do. But what we have noticed is that we need to be dealing with the negotiations in our business plan before we can really put it back into our APP. Slide 40 is on the Cape Town one, which I've already indicated that we haven't managed to really establish it. On slide 41, it's on the complaints that we receive. Our target was to make sure that we deal with complaints as they come in 100%, and we're able to deal with that. Then on capacity building programs, we have 10 of them, starting with the chefs. We are expected to train 577 trainees. We are able to do that. and 300 youth enrolled in the sommelier training course were able to also achieve that. Training for youth in hospitality, 2,000 actually were able to do that. 500 learners enrolled in the food safety were able to achieve that. Then we are expected in terms of the THRD strategy to come up with a coordinating body. We're able to establish that. It composes of education, the CTO as well. So we're able to do that. In terms of supporting local government, in terms of induction programs in the rural areas, we're able to support 10 municipalities, which are basically the district municipalities with their locals. On the NTCE, we're able to convene it. It was the last year in Bloemfontein, and this year we have started with Northwest, which will be for the next coming 2 years now. On slide 43, the issue of EDP, 20 black women trained at an institution of higher learning, which in this instance it's UNISA, were able to have 40 black women enrolled at an institution of higher learning. The reason for variance, actually there was no variance, we were able to really meet this one. And on 44, on tourist guide skills development programs, we're able to upskill tourist guide in existing tourist destination that is in Mapungubwe, as well as it was Mapungubwe and Mukhahlamba. And we're also able to come up with new entrants. I remember it was Northern Cape as well as Northwest. We're able to achieve growth. Then we have a program on training our youth on resource efficiency. We are also assisting with the green tourism incentive that you have come up with. We're expected to train 60 to achieve that, and in Limpopo and Gauteng, we have managed to achieve that. And even for this year, the three other provinces that we've come up with, we have already taken strides in terms of training 60 more. I think that's the last.
Thanks, Chair and committee members. I will speak to program one, which is corporate management. First indicating that we had 17 targets, of which two were not achieved. So we achieved 88, just over 88% of our targets. And I'll speak more detail on the ones we were not able to meet fully. Starting with slide 46, which deals with the strategic documents that we developed. We were able to meet those targets there in that the strategic plans and APP for 2018-19 were reviewed. We were also able to implement the 2016-17 annual performance report, as well as the four quarterly reports on the implementation of the strategic plan and APP. We were able to submit these documents to Auditor General and as well as to Parliament. Our quarterly reports were submitted also to DPME and National Treasury. The four quarterly risk reports were also submitted to the Risk Management Committee. And then the SAT quarterly oversight reports were also prepared. Slide 47, starting with the vacancy rate. we were able to keep that vacancy rate below the target of 8%, noting that we started at a very high rate of 14.6%, so a lot of work went into reducing that vacancy rate. And then on the representation of targeted groups, this is one of the two that we're not able to meet, the first one being on representation of women SMS. The target is 50%. We ended the year at 49.3%. It's a very finicky target because any movement up or down will change the target. So in this case, departure of a female SMS member led to a downward slide. However, by the next quarter, due to the appointment of a female SMS member, we shot back up to 52%. So it's a very finicky target, that one. And then going to the next slide, 48, it speaks to people with disabilities, our target of 3%. We exceeded it and ended the year financially at 4.7%, as well as for black representation. We were at 95.3%, above the target of 91.5%. The next one deals with the development and implementation of our workplace skills target. We fully implemented and developed that the workplace skills plan. Involved being able to provide the various programs such as the compulsory induction program. We were able to provide internal and external bursaries and other skills programs that have been identified as per our training plan. Slide 49 talks to compliance with prescripts on management of our labor relations cases. We're fully compliant there at 100% achievement. On our ICT strategic plan, we're able to also fully meet that target. Slide 50, regarding our quarterly and annual financial statements, we were able to compile three of our quarterly interim financial statements and submitted them to National Treasury. Our annual financial statement was also compiled and submitted to National Treasury and to the Auditor General's office. Implementation of our annual internal audit plan was fully implemented there to ensure that we have effective systems of finance, risk management, and internal controls. Slide 51 deals with the implementation of our communication strategy, which we're also fully able to implement with regards to awareness campaigns and outreach to stakeholders, particularly those in townships and rural areas. Slide 52 is the second target we're not able to meet. This is with regards to the Tourism Amendment Bill, which we were not able to submit to Parliament. And as we've indicated previously, we wanted to just finalize the policy review and analysis, particularly dealing with the areas such as the sharing economy around accommodation through online platforms, also finalizing the work on grading and professionalization of the tourist guiding. However, we do believe that we will be able to go to Cabinet to request for approval for gazetting in this financial year. And then the last slide, in slide 53, deals with procurement from BBBEE compliant businesses, and that we're able to fully achieve in order to support our SMMEs and empower them. And going to the next slide on human resource information, basically confirming on slide 55 that the total there of 513, but noting that that number includes our 25 interns. Slide 56 provides a breakdown on workforce representativity, and with the African colored Indians, that those statistics add up to the 95% representation that I spoke to earlier, and also confirming the 4.7% rate for people with disabilities. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, just to add to the record, slight amendment, Didi Chishetia said six projects were going to be funded under EPWP, inclusive of Little Mooring. It's supposed to be seven projects. Six were funded. She knows it, but it's just she's presenting now. The environment is different. Then the other issue is that we have lost two of our staff members with disability this year. We lost Strini Mudli. No, Strini is Naidu. It's a famous name. With that name, I don't know why he won. Strength is 29. And Sipo Masumbuka. They sadly passed away quite recently. Strini passed on first, and then Sipo passed on. We buried him that Monday, last week Monday. So that takes us from, we had 24 people with disability in the department. Now we've got 22. In terms of departments, national, and I would go as far as saying even in private sector, we still amongst the top two, being ourselves and the Gauteng Shared Service Center, that are at that sort of level. So we are, and these are people that were really doing quite some good things. Sipo was studying for his master's degree. He was blind. So we always say these able-bodied people, so-called. So we ask them, how many of you are actually studying towards your master's degree or even your honors degree? And when they put up their hands, you realize Sipo was quite able and he was really doing quite well. But we provide all the necessary support to our colleagues, and we intend to continue on this trend.
Thank you, DG and your team. Honourable members, I open to you to engage on the presentation that has been given to us on the annual report for the 2017-2018 financial year, which is our last, fortunately or unfortunately, as we are wrapping up for the fifth Parliament and preparing for the sixth Parliament. With a show of hands, I will note members. Okay, while members are still thinking of what to be engaging with the department with, I do have issues of concern, DG. You see, the department for the two outer years have performed and their audit outcomes were clean audits, in which you even received some prestigious awards. But this one says it's a regress meaning that you are not, somewhere, somehow, there are issues. You are not able to keep up the good work that you are doing. Although you might look at it as saying that there were no material findings, but it says to us things are now, or the internal controls that were there, they are no longer as tight as they were in the two previous financial years. Because we would want you and the entity to be able to maintain clean audit without material findings. But then what the AG has raised also on the issues of the classifications of the allocations from correct, allocations, be it prepaid or pre-advancement or something like that. It says that your team is not able to keep up with treasury regulations, meaning there is some lack. Well, I don't know, perhaps you would give us an explanation whether it's lack of retraining and training continuously. Because if treasury says these were supposed to be classified in this way and that you were not able to keep up with it, it tells us that you are lagging behind in terms of your training from where we are looking at things. And it raises concern. And then it also says to us, perhaps your restructuring, because you've recently undergone a restructuring process as a department. It then says perhaps you have people who you are not able to match people with their correct skills within the staff establishment. Perhaps you would explain to us what are the issues there, because really it's a concern for us if you are not able to keep up with treasury regulations and are able to record correctly. Because also you've went to town explaining to us on the issues of quotations, that in some instances you are not able to get three quotations, or you're not able to comply with what the regulation stipulates because of difficulties within areas. But then the issue with Treasury, with AG, is that you were not able to record such variances correctly. Because it's not a problem to say you were not able to get the three quotations, but where you were not able to record it correctly says that there is some loosening of the tight screws which you previously had. Because I would believe it's not the first time you confront such a situation. Those were just my two concerns. I also then would want to get clarity from DDG Malan on the training that you indicated. You've indicated that in order to qualify to get into the program, you needed to have NQF level 3. But you're not telling us what NQF level is the training that you are giving this data capturer. Perhaps from there, your training is linked to an NQF. These young people that you are training are able to even use this training and hunt for jobs elsewhere, because you wouldn't want to keep them within your space, and yet there are opportunities that are available out there. Perhaps what NQF level is the training that you are giving to them? And then I will come back with issues of the social tourism programs that are in DDG. Let me note Mom Adams, followed by Mom Masihela, and Honorable Mom Bam Kwanya.
Thank you.
And my apologies for arriving late here, but I had another meeting that I had to attend to. I want to start with the last input by the DG on the people that passed away. The two people, at this committee, we render our condolences to the department. It looks as if these were 200 persons. But you say you are rendering help to the family. Can you please tell us what kind of help are you rendering? Second thing is, usually when there is such a case in a family, the family usually struggles to get the employee's benefits to him. Is there a dedicated person, what part of the department is looking to the well-being of these people that passed away? Then, Chairperson, we had the Auditor General yesterday here with us, and he raised the point that although the department got unqualified reports the past year, it is unqualified, but with matters raised. And the one thing he raised is the projects of the EPWP. Now, Chairperson, all of us are very passionate about it's targeted towards the people without work, although it's short term, but it gives relief to communities. And what you highlighted is that you struggle with the project management. Now, Chairperson, if the department is struggling with project management of the facility, what are they going to do to render this challenge? And then, Chairperson, the second thing is, you mentioned it already, that the thing of getting 3 quotations for a project. Chairperson, I will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Indeed, Honorable Chair, to what you have just said, to add to that about the training to keep up with the Treasury regulations. We were with the Auditor General yesterday, I think, where they indicated that their doors are open. At any time when we need help, we are able to make appointment with them, and so that they can clarify issues or even workshop us on issues that we are not sure of. That is what they said. I think we should make use of the opportunity to avoid regression. There is an issue about the Damurin Dam, which you said it was not budgeted for, and yet we had something like $6 million that has been returned to Treasury. Can we talk to the two and see as to whether it was not possible to save the $6 million? Because if we return the money back and next time we want additional money, it's not going to be easy if you could not use all the money that you were given to you. On slide number 41, in the past, we used to have a lot of dropouts whenever you had your training. But on this slide 41, it seems all the people that you enrolled, they all went through the training. So can you share with us what different things have you done in this case so that we are able to have all the trainees going through the whole course without any of the dropouts, which I think is a good thing if we do it like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation. And I want to thank the DG in particular for his lengthy explanation about obtaining of quotations and so on. He was quite elaborate about it. I want to find out if there are any targeted interventions developed to achieve sector transformation, particularly local or rural communities, particularly targeting rural and or local communities. Slide 28, can you please explain about the ocean's economy in respect of SMMEs, SMME development and SMMEs, and what exactly this has, how it has impacted on the local communities and which communities are those. Slide 28 again. You are talking of the coastline route. How far has it gone, and what have you deduced out of incomes or advantages of the people along those routes? Slide 33. The funding mechanisms to support DFIs. You have relegated this important responsibility to people like ECDC, the other departments, government departments that give out, like the National Empowerment Fund and the IDCs and so on. Have you been looking into how it is progressing, or you just dumped that responsibility on them? And if there are any applicants, and how many, or have, what is the success rate in those areas for the tourism people? The last one is the local government tourism induction program with the focus on rural areas with the tourism potential, or you say was conducted. Are there any that were conducted in the Eastern Cape, and where? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and my apologies for having to pop out as well. I wanted to engage the department on some of the information on page 41, particularly the 300 sommeliers that were trained and the 2,000 youth in hospitality service training people that were enrolled in that program. Firstly, to establish what the dropout rate was in each case, and secondly, to engage the department on the fact that I've been trying to look into this and trying to work out how the industry manages to cope despite these programs. So I've done a case study at a hotel in my constituency that in fact has their own in-house program accredited by Capcita and also by City and Guild in London. So they have an international and a national accreditation process. They take in sommeliers, they take in hotel managers, and they take in chefs. These young men and women pay to be on the program, okay? And then they get free board and lodging. The hotel obviously is using their services while they are trained. They're getting on-the-job training. And from what I understand, it's a win-win for the students who want to be there. They're paying to be there, but they know they're getting the best training in the world. It's come at a subsidized cost because they're getting free board and accommodation, and they're learning on the job. It's not a theoretical course. And the fact that they're having to pay for it means they are serious, which means they don't quit when they find the job. It's not nearly as easy as they thought it would be. We all know the hotel hospitality industry is a very difficult, hard, long-hour kind of vocation. And the results are actually quite spectacular. So what I wanted to ask the department was, how do you compare that to what you are doing? Do you find that your students are as enthusiastic? Do you perhaps have the same or a possibly lower success rate? How difficult is it for these 300 sommeliers and 2,000 youth and hospitality service training trainees to find jobs afterwards? Because I understand that people that actually trained in these in-house programs run by hotels with the accreditation I've spoken about, it's trusted and they find jobs quite easily after that. Do you have an idea of how the two practices live side by side, and would you consider allowing the private sector to do more, or do you feel your own program justifies its separate existence? That's the first question. The second two are a little bit shorter. We've had discussion on this committee with the 32 SRI projects that for one reason or another were stalled or delayed or not complete. I'm not quite sure, there's not a lot of detail in this particular report back about that. Can you give us some kind of heads up that is, I think you, ma'am, you actually did the presentation yourself. How's that going? Have we turned the corner? Is it starting to become a success now? Have we got over those bottlenecks? I think just a little feedback on that. And then my last question is, there's been a lot of media coverage in KwaZulu-Natal, which I represent, about more and more local government municipalities taking over the role of CTOs. Instead of subsidizing a CTO, which is then run by dedicated people, by the private sector, the municipality takes over a destination or a resort, puts their own people in, the service levels start to decline, and the one that I'm most familiar with, which is the whole Howick Falls area, we've had dreadful newspaper reports of a 40% decline in business in that area as funding to HACTO, the Howick and Mzanduzi Community Tourism Organization, has been cut. And I wonder what the department's thinking on that was, because one thing I do believe is that government should do a few things very well rather than trying to do a whole lot of things not so well at all. Is it part of your brief, or do you consider it something you ought to be engaged in to interact with municipalities and encourage the growth of civil society and the strengthening of what they are doing in the tourism industry via subsidies and grants to make these things work at a private sector level or volunteer-based level? Or do you feel that you need to step aside and allow municipalities to take over one CTO after the other, and as what's happened in Howick, unfortunately, to run down a very popular resort where visitor numbers have dropped by half and business turnover has dropped by 40%. I think it's a critical issue of the times. There's been a lot of media coverage about that, and I'm convinced we're heading in the wrong direction, but I'd be intrigued to find out what you as a department would feel about that.
I will have the DDG to answer and deal with their programming issues specifically. We'll start with program one. With regards to support mechanisms for staff in general, not only for this specific one, in terms of the issues. And then Anime, and then Chairman, and then as well.
Thanks, DG. We have a bereavement policy in the department which addresses support that is provided to the family of an employee who has passed on. And through our employee assistance program, we provide counseling, which not only is provided to our employees when there's a loss, because when people work very closely together, they develop that closeness, you know, the relationships are fostered through those working conditions. So the trauma counseling is provided to our staff members, and we bring in professionals through our employee assistance program currently through CareWays, which operates our employee assistance program. But also that support is extended to the family members of the individual who has passed on, our employee. We also ensure that the release of any benefits, for example, any accrued leave, any union benefits are to be accruing to the individual, that all of that support is provided through our employee health and wellness unit, working with our HR unit and finance. And the release of funds that are in our control, we release those within a 7-day period, so it happens very quickly. On any other payouts, I don't know if the CFO would want to add anything there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the question that related to my area of work is around the training of the data, the youth that will serve as our data collectors, and the level of training. This training is specific, and it's specific around the methodology to collect the data that will be captured within the NTIMS. So it is around stakeholder management. It's, it's around how do you engage a person to collect the necessary data. The data, the training is done through Statistics South Africa, which is the official statistical body in the country. I don't have an answer around what NQF level the training is, but my gut feel is that it won't be less than a B degree level of qualification. But keeping in mind that it's only part of a bigger picture, so it is specific towards training and building capacity with the youth, because most of them ideally has gone through tourism training, knows about the importance of data collection, but never have done the collection of data themselves. Some of the youth are TVET college students that need a year of practical before they can complete their qualification, and this exercise will then also assist them to complete that year of practical to complete their qualification.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for those questions. I want to deal with the feedback on the GTEC process and the project management issues together, because they're linked. Part of the task that GTEC did, there were two assignments in the work that they did for us. The first assignment was to actually assess 32 projects and to make recommendations on each of them. That was a short-term assignment. The second piece of work that they had to do was to look at our systems and also to look at what we needed to do to improve our project management systems within the organization. So that piece of work is what they have been finalizing, and it comes to an end shortly. Part of what they did in the long-term assignment to support the work that we're doing and to transfer skills to the department was to actually look at a comprehensive overhaul of how we do project management, aligning it with the systems that exist within GTEC. We have also, in our restructuring process, Honourable Member Adams, created a project management unit. That team has in fact now undergone project management certified training, so they will be registered as certified project managers. They are working across the organization to actually put in place systems around project management. But it's been aligned to the process that GTEC has been running. So as part of the long-term assignment, there's been a series of training and workshops that has taken people through what a new system should look like, what the templates are, the actual use of those templates. I think aligned to that process, we've also trained almost 80 people in the organization on the standard for infrastructure delivery, procurement and delivery management. We are also setting up panels because one of the challenges we had in previous projects was that we don't have, of course, we haven't employed certified engineers or architects in our program, but we're running infrastructure projects. So part of the work that the panel is doing is actually to source in that capacity around technical professional services to work with the teams that we have to actually improve the project management. So it is work in progress, but I think that we have made significant strides towards addressing some of the challenges that are related to our previous project management challenges, particularly as they relate to infrastructure projects. So our strategy has been two-pronged. One is to actually skill our own team in understanding the actual industry, in understanding the standard for infrastructure procurement and delivery management. That allows them then to be better able to actually manage projects on that side. The second one is to train a dedicated team of project managers and to make sure that they assist the organization then to integrate project management practices across the organization, both in terms of infrastructure but also other types of project management. And then the third strategy is to actually ensure that we have the necessary technical skills from a professional services perspective available to the organization through a panel to ensure that we aren't managing things that actually aren't our core competency, but that we have technical professional services managing that. To add to the question, Honorable Krumbach, that was asked about where we are in terms of the GTEC process, there were three categories of projects and work that we needed to do. So the one category was to actually close out projects that we were no longer going to fund or had been completed, and we've made significant strides in actually resolving that. The second one was to actually reconceptualize a set of projects that were recommended. We actually now have the final reports on the reconceptualization, and we're finalizing then our decisions on those projects in order to move forward. So we committed that we would be able to do that. The third thing was to actually put in place our panels that of professional services to support the work that we're doing. And we are a little bit behind in terms of the original target that we set, but we are, in fact, putting out those terms of reference very shortly. The panels should be in place by early next year. So in terms of the work and that we set out to do in terms of GTEC, we have, in fact, completed two sets of the tasks, and we've made significant progress with the third one. So we are confident, actually, that it's on the right track, having implemented the recommendations related to that. I think the question on Letla Mareng Dam, let me clarify. Letla Mareng Dam was budgeted for. In fact, it was at a planning phase. What the GTEC recommendation on Letla Mareng Dam was that the conceptualization as it currently was is actually not affordable and won't actually deliver return on investment. So on Letla Mareng Dam, the reason we didn't spend any funds on it was that it should have moved into technically the next stage, which would have been implementation. But because of the GTEC assessment process, it didn't move into implementation. It is one of the projects that has now been reconceptualized, and it's amongst the reports that has just been finalized. So it was not a case of there not being budget for it. It was really a case of actually reviewing the planning documentation to make absolutely certain how to proceed before we actually proceeded. On the oceans economy, I think we are making a presentation to the portfolio committee on the 31st of October. So on the detail of the SMMEs, if you would allow, Honourable Member Baum, if I can respond to that at that point. But with regards to the Indo-Atlantic route, the Indo-Atlantic route is in fact a concept. It's a concept that actually links the entire coastline through a brand and through a marketing strategy. The work that we targeted to do in the last financial year was to understand what existed on the route from a product development perspective, but also from a marketing perspective in terms of the associations that were already on the ground and the current work that they're doing. The second piece of work was to actually understand what the current demand for those products are, and also to understand what future demand for those products are. So what we now have is a very comprehensive mapping of all the products along the route and also all of the marketing work that's being done and the work being done by various associations along the route. We have also now got an assessment of what the demand for those products are, and we have a gap analysis. So the gap analysis is really what is the difference between what we have and what is being demanded. So for each of the different provinces and for the whole route itself, we actually have very detailed information now on what the next step should be to A, support the marketing efforts along the route, but B, to also support product development and also further infrastructure development like roads, like airports, etc. So this is now the next stage of work that we will be implementing. And that's what was achieved in this last year. It was a lot of work, and it was actually a lot of detail. I think the report is a 354-page document that talks to all of the information that is available. So presently what's being done is that is being finalized with the consultation with all of the stakeholders, which include provinces, include product owners, include associations along the route, and that information is what we are now using to build the work that we're going to do to improve the tourism product offering and the marketing strategy for the Indo-Atlantic route.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with a question from Honorable Masahela on what is it that we are doing different to be able to maintain the numbers. During the presentation, DDG Shamila indicated that we recruit extra so that we are able to mitigate when we have dropouts to be able to be able to continue having those the numbers so that we are able to replace. Honorable Baum spoke about on transformation. What are the interventions that we are doing in order to really do transformation, especially in rural areas? All our programs have a bias towards rural areas, including youth, including women. The chefs that we do, with the exception of the Somalia, because we have targeted Western Cape, Gauteng, as well as KZN, because that's where we'll be able to get the industry people to be able to host and coach these young people. That's where we have I'd say it's not biased towards the rural areas, but the rest of the program, that's where we really are biased towards the rural areas. The question was also to say where in the Eastern Cape, in terms of the local government capacity building. When we conceptualized the local government support, the first thing was we need to go to those areas which, according to the comprehensive rural strategy of rural development, they are within those areas.
We started first with Bembe, Umkhanya Gude, Chris Hani is also part of it. Actually, most of the areas is right in the far slums, deep rural areas, where we're able to, especially where there is also potential for tourism, to bring in the traditional leaders, to bring in the councillors who are dealing with tourism or economic development within that municipality, as well as the LED officials, plus the LTOs within that area, because we want to also assist them in forging relationships in terms of what needs to be done within that community. Bushbuck Ridge was within also the first rural municipalities that we assisted, Bushbuck Ridge. Yes. So I don't have the list fully now, but we do have a list of all the areas that we have assisted, and they are all, yes, even in Eastern Cape. We do have those. I think Chris Rani out of my head currently, but it's more than that. Hence, we have 10 of them that we have assisted. And it's not only once a year, but over 3 years, we'll go back to the same municipality so that we are able to capacitate them. And most of them have managed to also dedicate some funding towards tourism, because we found that it's either if there's funding for tourism, if there's anything that needs funding, is the first one that they take money from. Tourism is where they take the money from. But now the main issue is for them to understand the value of tourism. And we are really making strides in that space.
The other question was on, the oceans have responded to,
the funding mechanism. Do you just throw this money to NEF IDC? Are you part of these people? Yes. We are part of all the committees that look into the applications that we receive. IDC, I mean the Education Committee myself. NEF was even seconded officials currently. One is in IDC, one is in NEF, so that they transfer the skills to our officials as well. For the TTF, which is the Transformation Fund, we received 111 applications. We declined 31. We are currently screening 66. We have done pre-due diligence to 2, currently doing the due diligence to 8. Ready for Adjudication is 1. We have approved 4. I've indicated that we have approved 4, which is Tala, it's a KZN company, let me not speak the name. And then we have one in Mpumalanga, which I can indicate because the minister launched it, the Graskop Gorge. We also have what you call the Golden Valley Game Reserve that is in Northwest. All in all, the money that we're able to disperse is 12,196,000. But as I indicated, last year we didn't disperse anything. We started this year. Including the green incentive, as I indicated, I'm in the Adjudication Committee. I have the numbers in terms of what we have done thus far.
The other question was on, Honorable Kronberg wanted to know our partnership with the private sector. Regarding all the training programs that we have, we cannot run without their support. Some of the schools, the Swiss Hotel School, is hosting some of our learners. Most of the private schools, they also train these young people. They find, or they are friends with the ones that you have just indicated. But we also have government schools, the FET colleges, which are having tourism within their curriculum, also helping with this. Last year we had 100% pass from a TVET college in Venda. But others, it will be 98. The pass rate is quite good. We were requested to
come up with a database of all the trainings that we're doing so that we can track. We started last year, and I was surprised to be told that 10 of the chefs that we have trained, they have their own businesses. 19, they are having their own businesses. 10 are in management positions in the country. Another 10, they are in management positions internationally. So we'll have to really push to check other training, like the sommelier, the hospitality, what is the status. But at least we have started with the chefs to have an understanding. How can we support them going forward? And maybe the DG might put it that we need to also come up with a fund that can support them with the startups going forward. But we do have partnerships as well with CIFA, with CEDA, the banks, which is not a proper partnership, but they assist in terms of imparting information in terms of how should they keep their financial documents so that when they apply to them, it becomes easy for them to get funding. The results that the Honourable indicated, it would be good that we get the full details so that we can follow up with the ministry and find out what could be the issue. But one thing for sure, as government, it is not our space to be in. We should allow private sector to run these things. So as I'm saying, that our local government capacity building is also to impart to them that that's not your space. Your space is to provide basic services. I was in Port Shepstone some time back. There was no water. And when I questioned the issue was, no, there was a strike and the officials have decided to cut the pipeline. But if you talk to those officials, they understand that the tourists, when they come in, it's revenue for your municipality. It's work for most of the community members within that space. So these are the things that we need to continuously talk about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the honorable members can see that this team is in charge. They are very clear about what is going on the ground, and we are able to exchange notes at management meetings. Part of the notes we exchange. I mean, we take note of the concerns that you've raised. We did take a lesson from what we picked up from whatever happened with this audit. And one of the things that I did was to bring in all the staff that deal with supply chain. Probably at about 2 to 3 hours ago. And we went through all these reports in detail. And I wanted to understand who deals with what specifically, at what point do they need to deal with what, and so on and so forth. So some of the training that we do, we do it differently without necessarily bringing in people in-house to come and train them per se, but to get that level of understanding of whether these guys are really clear about what these things are and so on and so forth. And they do express their own frustrations as well, in that in some instances there may be pressure that comes from the community that says we need to deal with something within a very short space of time. And when that comes up, it becomes difficult for them to be able to acquire all the necessary things that are supposed to be dealt with, which is what I was saying, that there are those cases that between myself and the CFO, we have to look at them and say, do we have all these things? We do record everything, Honorable Chairperson. What the AG might have said was not necessarily records that probably would have been at head office. They wanted us to demonstrate that if we have appointed person X, that person is going to then follow the exact same procurement mechanisms that we use internally to execute that EPWP project, which means if it is going to go above 500,000, that person must then go for a tender. How they're going to do that, I don't know. And these are people that are implementers who themselves are already given a tender. And they wanted us to have all that documentation in house. We said, it's not here. The documentation is outside. It's where the implementation is taking place. Give us a certain number of days, we'll give you all the documents. That's why we don't have a qualification. They would have actually qualified us because they were saying 90 million needs to be accounted for whether these people are following procedure or not. We accounted for every cent. And that's how we actually came back to this thing that we said, this is what we have got. So I want to believe, I mean, I do honestly want to believe that as an accounting officer, I spend all my time making sure that things go right in the department. But it's not always going to go right. I'm working with human beings. There will be instances where things will definitely go wrong. Do we have a system to be able to detect? Yes, we do. That's why we are able to give you the six areas where we incurred the 271,000, irregular expenditure. So that is because of the system and its ability to be able to detect these things. I can even tell you which unit these things came from and which officials were responsible for dealing with that. And we have spoken to those officials. We have made it a management meeting issue to say these are the issues. Issues, Chairperson, that relate to these issues about classification and so on and so forth, sometimes it does happen that we do get, instructions. Instruction notes and so practice, all those things. Sometimes we do get that in October or in November. That means we've got to go all the way back and restart. So you've got your first quarter, your second quarter, and then it comes with the interim financials, and you're using a particular accounting procedure, so to say, and that accounting procedure changes. So it's really the amount of time that as an accounting officer I spend on these types of issues, whilst I have to spend all the other time with the DDGs going through the business. It's quite a lot. But as you run a system this big with 2 billion plus, there will be one or two things that would happen. And that's why the materiality matters. Under normal circumstances, and I would want to believe that in some other departments you may find that such an amount would not necessarily have featured. This amount, under normal circumstances and under the normal rules, should not even feature. It should not even, because it's immaterial. Because they know there will be, they give that materiality because they know at some point some things will happen. And when those things happen, we need to deal with those. So what we have agreed with the CFO is that as and when these things get released from Treasury, we bring those things to the MANCO meeting, not just the top management. We bring it to an environment where the chief directors also are seated because they also have delegations that they are exercising. That way then we know that all of us are on the same page and we are tracking these things. Because what would happen is that DDG Chedia would think that these projects are like this and they are supposed to be accounted for like this and say, these are my work in progress and pass it on to the CFO. The CFO looks, so there has to be everybody looking exactly at the same set at the same time and so on and so forth. So we do believe that we would be able to the systemic issues that we lapsed here and there, we would be able to deal with that. But the human element is something that we keep a watch on as we go throughout the whole process. Then the restructuring, I think it was a good exercise. This is why now you hear Shamila speaking totally, it's distinct. What she's saying is so distinct from what Murunga is talking about. and each one has got a very specific area where they are able to say this is. We didn't have a mechanism to deal with issues of detailed planning support, the real planning, proper planning support, master plans and so on. We didn't have that mechanism prior. We didn't have a mechanism to deal with issues of investment promotion. We didn't have, there's a whole host of things that we did not necessarily deal with at that particular time. But now we're able to deal with those things and we're able to provide structured support where it is required. I think the question with regards to transformation, some explanation that was given by Osmo, but there are a number of different programs that are actually targeted at that. And that's why she was talking about these programs are actually in those areas. But we're talking about issues of development of attractions that would be in those areas, because people would only go to places because they would be able to do certain activities. We're talking about market access program. We're talking about incentive. We're talking about funding. We're talking about incubation. We're talking about trade. There's a whole host of these things that are actually taking place as we speak, which are targeted at transformation. So when you see the numbers that are coming out of that, you are able then to link it directly with this. But it is also important to amplify the fact that we did a lot of work with National Treasury when it comes to procurement of travel services. Quite a lot of work. And that is a big, big budget. I mean, this is anything between 10 and 12 billion rand that gets to be spent across the system for these purposes. And our codes provide for 30% ownership. They provide for 30% ownership. And procurement from people that are in full compliance with the codes is a requirement in as far as that process is concerned. So these are some of the things that it's not an immediate visible benefit, but these are very great benefits. You're talking benefits in being able to park your vehicles at these big airports so that they can be rented, or whether you want a duty-free space in the airports, or whether you're talking about accommodation. Think of Cape Town as an example and the movement of people from Pretoria to Cape Town on a daily basis and the utilization of these facilities and so on. So there's a whole host of these things that they are not as visible, but they are actually real and they are there. And I think the quantification of something like that would really assist with the communication. There is a question that was raised by Honorable Kumbo, which relates to the funding issues for non-government entities that are dealing with tourism, particularly at a locality. We don't provide the funding, but what we provide is exactly what the DDG was saying, that we, in our interaction with municipalities, we encourage that they must work together at a locality. Part of the bigger challenge that we have is that ours is a concurrent mandate. So there are different practices, and we can't do anything about that. But where we are able to assist, we do assist. And our assistance in the main would be to intervene where there is a product, not a product in the sense of an attraction, let me put it like that, that would need to be enhanced, that would then make sure that people go in there. That's why we've put money into some work that is taking place now at the capture site itself. So those we believe are things that we have got a bit of role that we can deal with those, but it's almost like all of us have to come to the table and be able to assist one another to be able to do. all these issues. I think the project management issues DDG Chelsea has dealt with. I want to add that that training she was talking about, the 80 people plus, it covered people that are in legal, people that are in supply chain management, in finance, direct project managers that would come from here directly and so on. So it's everybody that has got something to do with the project that we are doing. Every touch point, there was some sort of detailed training. And what you didn't say, Shamila, which I thought you would say, is that the people that trained them on that manual are the people that developed the manual for National Treasury. Then there's an issue about the expenditure I think 99.7% is almost like for an accounting officer is really now almost playing with fire, if I could put it like that. Because over expenditure is illegal. Because as members of parliament you would not have authorized it. Now, out of two billion plus, and we're talking about 6 million. Any authorization further of some amounts, it's so easy to find that we go slightly over the allocated, the authorized amount. And that's why we would always keep our target between 98 and around 99.5, somewhere there, just to keep that bit of room so that we don't find ourselves going over the limit. I think I will stop at that.
DG and your team, thank you very much. I think you have answered our question sufficiently, so unless members strongly believe that there were questions that were not adequately answered, that Ma'am Honorable Mukwanya can.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I didn't hear properly. I had asked something about the local government tourism induction program with the focus on rural areas. I'm not sure if I heard properly what the answer was, and which ones are there in the Eastern Cape, if there are any. I'm not sure I heard that.
I'm not going to the annual report. Was it you? Yes, it was me. I did indicate that I remember money from the from the Eastern Cape, but I'll be able to provide a full list of other areas because we're in Northwest, we're in Limpopo, we're in Mpumalanga, we're in KZN.
I would then perhaps suggest that how we can approach that is that you give us a lecture of all the local government supported training programs that you have. But you mentioned 20 municipalities, district municipalities that are linked to municipalities.
Yes.
Perhaps if you can give us that through Petra, it would assist us. Because right now to say she must zoom into Eastern Cape, it would be unfair. Because you are looking at training for the entire country. Yes. And then, honourable members, let me say it gives us comfort to an extent, DG, to understand that we are doing oversight on a department that is accountable for the funds that they receive, for the taxpayers' money that are being spent. Because even if we are concerned around transformation, service delivery, and ensuring that we create jobs, for as long as monies are not spent correctly, there will be issues. But as for us in this portfolio, we have been overseeing a portfolio that takes good care and ensures that they account. And where there is a fruitless expenditure, where there is irregularities, we have seen that you have brought those to book, and we have been able to track and trace those. So we are comforted, and it gives us pleasure to understand that as members of Parliament, we are doing our part, because our sole mandate is to hold those that are spending the money accountable, ensure that monies are spent according to the prerequisites and are spent accordingly. With these few words, honourable members and members of the department, I would thank everyone for coming and remind members of Parliament that we still have a portfolio committee tomorrow where we are going to be looking into the annual report of SAT. I also have an announcement that the ANC component of the members of Parliament, can they remain behind when the meeting is adjourned? And I declare the meeting closed. Thank you.
I'm the one.